1 week from today, after over a year of campaigns and an estimated $4 billion in cash, the midterm elections will be over and we'll be talking about the winners and the losers. It's time now for our weekly look at Congress with USA Today politics editor Paul Singer.
Some analysts are calling these the closest congressional elections in at least a decade. While Republicans remain the favorite for the Senate, a lot of races are still up in the air. We take a look at what the final stretch is going to look like for candidates around the country.
Also, while an unpopular president may be hurting Democrats, minimum wage hikes have become a winning theme for them. Here with us now is Paul Singer. Hey, Paul.
Hi, Veronica. How are you?
Pretty good, thanks. Well, would you agree with what seems to be a theme for analysts that these are the tightest congressional races in at least a decade?
Sure, I guess. The House, as you recall, has flipped twice in the past 10 years. So, I don't know, 2006 was pretty exciting, and then 2010 was pretty exciting. So, of course, those are both big wave elections. I'm not sure this is going to be that big a wave, although, you know, it could be. It's still hard to tell.
Do you think this is an exciting season? The Atlantic had a big article about how this was the most boring season in a long time. Where do you come down on that?
Well, it depends what you do for a living. I mean, you know, this is our Super Bowl here in the political news business. So, you know, we think it's kind of exciting. I think the thing that has got people at the moment sort of down on the election cycle is that we're showing in poll after poll after poll after poll that the general view of the public is malaise and frustration and unhappiness with the drift of America and with the tone of our conversation. So, you know, if you are a campaign junkie like some of us are, you think it's exciting to watch all these people race around and try and convince people to vote for them. But if you are a voter, you are probably tired of the nonstop barrage of negative ads. You're probably a little uncertain about the future of America at this point. You're a little concerned about all the headlines about Ebola and ISIS and other bad stuff. So it doesn't sound like any fun to you this year.
All right, well, let's get to the races, the stuff you're finding fun right now. There are two surprising trends we're looking at here in Georgia and West Virginia, just days away from these elections. What have you found there?
Yeah, it's really funny. They're almost mirror images of each other. We wrote a story that I think just went up online a few minutes ago about the West Virginia Senate race. This has never been competitive. Shelley Moore Capito is a congresswoman from West Virginia who is about to become the Republican senator from West Virginia. She'll be the first Republican senator since like the 1950s in West Virginia. And it's funny because, you know, in 2000, when Al Gore lost West Virginia as part of, you know, losing barely the presidential race, we all thought that was an anomaly, and West Virginia has been Democratic for years. Well, now, if this unfolds the way it looks like it's going to unfold, it's possible the last elected congressperson, a Democratic congressperson from West Virginia, will be Joe Manchin, the senator, and everybody else can be Republicans. I mean, the state has trended very heavily red over the past decade or so.
Real quickly, how come?
Well, partly it's because of coal, partly because the Democrats have been very heavily advocating for climate change rules and new restrictions on coal-burning power plants. That issue has resonated across across West Virginia, Kentucky, and other parts of coal country. There has been this message that Democrats are launching a war on coal. Republicans have mined that issue very much to their benefit. Georgia's the other way around. Georgia was a red state. We didn't even really look at it during the 2012 presidential campaigns. Now, all of a sudden, the incumbent governor is in trouble, a very close race against Jimmy Carter's grandson. The Senate race is an open seat for a Republican seat, and again, very close race between Michelle Nunn, the Democrat, and David Perdue, the Republican. We have two competitive races, and Georgia may be trending bluer.
Interesting. Well, 6 days or so until the elections. Can anything be accomplished in those 6 days, or is what we're seeing, you know, today pretty much going to solidify, and that's what we're going to see in the results?
It's hard to get any message out in the last 6 days. I mean, if you have not made the point yet, you're not going to make the point. And you know, basically, your opponent would have to shoot somebody to really break through and change the tenor of the discussion now in the last 6 days. Now, What does make a difference is, do you get your voters to the polls? Do you get to the doors? Do you knock on the doors? Do you get to the phone calls? Do you get the buses out to drag people over to the polls? That's what really makes the difference in these last closing days. It's execution now. It's technology now. It's not really message anymore.
Gotcha. Well, we're going to move on now. And you have a new information organizing tool that USA Today is using. And it looks at political action on Twitter. It looks at age, gender, location of people talking about a whole bunch of political topics. Can you describe it for us and what struck you about it?
Yeah, this is an adventure, an experiment. We worked with Twitter. They have basically found a way to go through about a million tweets a day that cover political topics, and they're sorting them by topic and then breaking them down by gender, age, and location. We don't see individual tweets. We just see the bulk data on this stuff. And we're able to put it into a fun interactive graphic where you can scroll through it and sort of look at, you know, where are most of the tweets coming from on a certain topic. I mean, for instance, today, if you looked at the thing, you'd see that in the abortion, among abortion tweets, North Dakota has the highest, this big bubble in the middle of this. We show these things as basically various sized marbles. Big marble for North Dakota. How come? Well, it turns out that last night, the North Dakota Supreme Court made a ruling on an abortion issue. So that then explains how come all this Twitter activity on abortion in North Dakota. It's really kind of cool.
Yeah, and one interesting thing, scrolling through the different issues, wages, abortion, Ebola, all of them really, is that it's guys doing most of the tweeting.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll find that by and large, although, again, if you look at that slide for the abortion one from today, and this thing updates daily, you look at the one from today on abortion, you'll see that it's not nearly as dominant with men, many more women than in other issue areas. But, yeah, Twitter is tends to be a male-dominated conversation. I can't tell you why that is. It just is. I don't know if it's because the platform tends to reward male behaviors of quick, punchy, aggressive commentary. I don't know. I'm making stuff up now. but yeah, there's a bunch of stuff that we're learning about this thing, and that's why I call it an experiment. We don't actually know what any of this tells us, but it's really interesting, and it's clearly clues to some things, that like the North Dakota example shows us.
Now, another thing that popped up was that the wage debate seems to be a winning message for Democrats, and this showed up prominently in Wisconsin. A lot of Wisconsin people tweeting about wages.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about that a little bit and what it means for Wisconsin and for Democrats?
Sure. Well, this is, in Wisconsin, of course, has had this long time, very strong union presence. Minimum wage issues is a big thing for the unions. And a big thing, I think, for a lot of working people. And, of course, for Democrats, it is a core issue of this election, is that the Republicans, they will say, are for the rich, and the Democrats are for the working guy, and the minimum wage increase is urgent and important. I suspect, and I'm not in Wisconsin, obviously, but I suspect this is an issue that Mary Burke is probably playing very hard against Scott Walker in the governor's race.
And Paul, just let me jump in there. Lots to talk about, but in our last 30 seconds, what are you doing to get ready for Election Day at USA Today?
Working all the time. we're designing stuff like this. We're doing online things. We're doing a whole series of internet stories. We've got staff deployed across the country. We're doing nothing but working and talking and reading politics 24/7.
And is it going to be an all-nighter?
Oh, yeah. The question is whether it's only going to be one.
Gotcha. Well, it'll be an exciting night. We'll hear about it afterwards. Paul, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Veronica. Be well. Talk to you.
That was Paul Singer, politics editor at USA Today. He joins us every week at this time to talk about Congress, and he'll be with us from today and actually next week to cover the results of the midterms.